Thank you so much for hitting the play button on your favorite listening device of choice from wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Duff Tyler, and this is A Duff Said. Now, it's been more than a minute since I last did this show, so it is so good to be back behind the mic giving you all the great content that you've come to expect from A Duff Said. My guest this week is longtime Michigan sportscaster Ryan Slocum. Now, for 17 years, Ryan worked at the ABC affiliate in the Flint-Saginaw area. During that time, he was an anchor, a reporter, and later the sports director. But he became more than just the local sports guy. He has become, without question, one of the best sportscasters in the state. And he's got the hardware to back that up. Over the course of his career, Ryan has taken home 6 Emmy Awards for his anchoring and reporting. Now, currently, Ryan works for the State Champs Network here in the state of Michigan. His latest documentary just dropped. Take a listen.
Roberson was the 7th-ranked high school player in the nation in the 1995 class, headlined by Kevin Garnett. And he was the jewel of the Michigan class, which was considered at the time to be the best ever. But with the personal accolades rolling in, his personal life began spiraling out of control.
We're going to discuss that and a whole lot more. My conversation with Ryan Slocum starts now. Ryan, it is always good to run you down. How are things where you are, man?
Ah, brother, couldn't be better, man. It's things are winding down a little bit here as summer is about to hit. We had a great year. We got everything in. I don't know how we did it, but we did it as far as sports go. It didn't look like we were going to play anything, and we played darn near everything. So it's going great, man. Things couldn't be better, man. Excited for the summer, and excited for what's coming up next, man. We got a lot of good things cooking, which I know we're going to talk about.
Speaking of wrapping up the summer, last night you were at the Michigan All-Star Game. In fact, I believe you were doing play-by-play for that?
Yeah, play-by-play for the Michigan Coaches Association Football All-Star Game, which is another thing we didn't think would even happen. So it was awesome. Yeah, man.
Tell me what you saw out there last night. Who are some of the big names that really shined in that game?
Well, I'll tell you what, dude. A lot of GLIAC talent in there. Back in the day, it was the 39th annual game by the Michigan High School Football Coaches Association. And, back in the day, when things weren't the way they are today and there's so much politics and kids not wanting to get hurt and their teams probably telling them not to play in all-star games and all that kind of stuff, you would get your huge talents in these games. We didn't have the huge talents in this game, but there was a lot of really good kids. And you're looking at tons of GLIAC. I'm telling you, I don't know the exact number, but there are 19 kids from Michigan who are going to Ferris State next fall. Two-time GLIAC champ, back-to-back GLIAC champ. These guys, they must have had at least 10 guys in the game. Bunch of Grand Valley kids. Bunch of Michigan Tech kids. SVSU, Ryan Brady up there, my guy. Tons of kids from SVSU. And we did have a couple Western Michigan. We had a Miami of Ohio kid. So we had some matching going on. But just great talent, man, from all over the state. And the cool thing was you saw a lot of kids that maybe you don't know about. We had a kid, Cameron Karp from Marquette, catch a 45-yard touchdown at the buzzer in the first half. That kid is a stud. He won the 200-meter dash, finished runner-up in the 100. He's going to play football and basketball at Northern Michigan. That kid really stood out to me. But there was a lot of it. Dorian Riley, the running back from Jackson, record-setting running back. He's a kid going to Ferris. That kid was all over the place. I believe he had a 50-yard touchdown run. So just talent everywhere. But big for the GLIAC, man. If you were a GLIAC football fan, a Division II football fan, dude, this was your game, man. This was your game for sure.
Now, that sound you hear in the background, that is my dog, Bernie, walking across the floor. He's decided he no longer wants to be a part of this. He is leaving the studio.
Hey, dude, I just fed mine right before you called, so I get it, man. You know, you got it. They do what they want to do.
I have some exciting news for you, Ryan. Since we last spoke, I have been able to pick up listeners in California, in Wisconsin, and Virginia. So for people who may be a little unfamiliar with Michigan collegiate sports, what exactly is the GLIAC, and what kind of impact does it have on the state?
Well, the GLIAC, it's Division II. It's basically the Great Lakes Conference, Great Lakes Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. GLIAC. And you probably have heard of a bunch of dudes who have played in there. Grand Valley State University was the biggest for the longest time, the early 2000s. You're looking at Brian Kelly, the head coach at Notre Dame. He was at Grand Valley State for like 15 or 20 years before he moved on to Central, then Cincinnati, then Notre Dame. You're looking at Matt Judon from the Ravens, Pro Bowl player, came from Grand Valley State. Brandon Carr had the longest streak, active game streak, starting streak, I think, actually, of like 160 games until this season, came from Grand Valley State. Todd Harriman went to Saginaw Valley State, the great old lineman that played for the Eagles for years and years and years. So there's just number of guys that have come out of here. It is Division II football, but it's Division II, and all sports at the highest level. This is the conference in Division II. They've been pumping out athletes in every single sport. The Director's Cup that goes to like the all-around program, and they give you points if you win the soccer title and finish third in track and da-da-da. They do this in Division I, too. Then they add them all up, and then, hey, you're the director's champion. You're the best all around. Grand Valley wins that all the time. And it's not just them. Ferris State has been incredible in football for quite a while now. So, anyway, just an incredible Division II conference. It's awesome, man. And a lot of dudes go pro. A lot of, especially in football, you get a couple of guys a year that are going to be on NFL teams.
The name that still sticks out for me is Jeff Janis from a few years ago from Saginaw Valley State. Unheralded guy, seventh round draft pick. I think he was like somewhere in the 230s, taken by Green Bay. And if you remember the season, I think it was 2015, you know, Aaron Rodgers was down to throw into basically the towel boy that season because so many receivers went down. Jeff Janis steps in and has the game of his life. He goes
in the playoffs
on prime time. Now, they didn't win that game. Larry Fitzgerald caught the game winner in overtime, and then Arizona went on to lose in the NFC Championship game. But that was such a great moment for him because he caught the second Hail Mary pass that Aaron Rodgers threw that season. And he caught it right at the buzzer against Patrick Peterson, one of the best corners in the NFL of all people. And there's a guy right there from Saginaw Valley State. And I had to do a story on him about that. And so I went and talked to some of the guys who saw him, and they said, look, you may not have heard of Saginaw Valley State. You may not have seen this guy. But trust me, you give this guy an opportunity, and he's going to make an impact for you. And that is just pretty much every guy in the GLIAC. I mean, it may not be somebody you've ever heard of, but if you just give them the opportunity, they're going to shine. And you mentioned some names, too, like Brandon Carr and some others that have come from the mid-Michigan area that just needed an opportunity to show what they could do.
Absolutely. And Brandon Carr ended up being, you're going back now to like 2004 and 5. He was the Deion Sanders of Division II. And that sounds ridiculous if anybody's hearing this like, oh, yeah. No, he really was. He was so good as a sophomore. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but let's say he had 8 interceptions. By the time he was a junior, they did not throw to his side of the field. That's how good he was. They did not throw. And you look at his numbers as a junior and senior, he's got like 1 interception, 2 pass breakups. That's because they didn't throw to him. They didn't throw anywhere near him because he was so good. And then he was taken in the 5th round by the Kansas City Chiefs and just had a phenomenal career. But you mentioned it, Jeff Janis, not only from Saginaw Valley State, from a little tiny, tiny town on Lake Huron, Tawas, which no one listening to this, unless you're in Michigan, will know where and what that is. A little tiny, tiny lake town in northern Michigan called Tawas. And yeah, you're right, dude. You're great memory there on that game against the Cardinals. This guy had 2 catches all year long. He played in every game, but had 2 catches. They get you into the playoffs, and he goes 7 grabs for a 145 and 2 touchdowns, including what you said, that 40-yard Hail Mary at the buzzer to send the game to overtime. Just incredible, and the best dude you'll ever meet, too, man. Jeff is a great dude.
And not to rub it into Lions fans, but that was one of 2 Hail Marys that Aaron Rodgers threw season. The other one was, of course, the Motor City Miracle. So that was one of 2 that he had. And if you would like to see my story on Jeff Janis, all you have to do is go to my website, aduffsaid.com, and click on the Duff's videos link on my page and just scroll down for Jeff Janis's breakout night so you can see that story. Now, you, my friend, I have seen you do sports highlights for a number of years. I have never, ever heard you do play-by-play. What was that experience like last night?
Yeah, so I've done it a couple times now, starting this past football season. I did a few games for Bloomfield Hills' brother Rice for the State Champs Network, where I work right now. We kind of have a connection with brother Rice, and they had a couple of big games, and we did cover the games. And especially, if you remember, back in September and whatnot, when the season started, the only people allowed in the stadium were each kid got 2 tickets. That was it. So your mom and your dad could come, and that was it. No one else could go to a game. So a lot of people were watching online, and we did a bunch of games. So I did a couple of games for Brother Rice, and man, it was different. It really was. You know, it wasn't anything I didn't think I could do, but when you step in there and you're doing it with a color commentator, which for me was Richie Pop, who is now a coach at Southfield, A&T. I didn't know Rich. I'd heard of his name. I didn't know him. I had no clue. So I didn't know if this guy was going to like me, if I was going to like him, if he was going to be a jerk, if I was going to be a jerk. I didn't have any chemistry with this guy at all. And you got to sit there and talk for 2 hours. And this is not network TV. This is the internet. There's not commercial breaks. There's no sideline reporter. There's none of that. So you got to fill time in between plays. You just got to talk. And I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, I'm in the mid-Michigan area. I haven't covered a ton of Brother Rice games in my life, or maybe like 3 in my whole life. I know the tradition and whatnot, but man, it's not like I was covering Flushing or covering Beecher or something. I didn't have the background, you know? So there, you had to fill a lot of time, and it was weird, man. It wasn't easy. It was not easy, but it turns out Coach Pop was awesome. We got along great. We had great chemistry. He knows what he's talking about. He's awesome, and it turned out great. So then we did another game about 2 weeks later, and then we got signed on to do Lawrence Tech football season, which unfortunately got canceled because of the pandemic, and then they were going to play in the spring, but the spring ended up being like February, and the weather was terrible, so they didn't play. So we didn't end up doing that, but it went very well. And then we got assigned to do this game here, and I think it's the best we've done. It was awesome. The kids made it awesome by doing amazing plays, you know, so they made our job easy. But it's different, man. There's no script. You know, I'm a guy that comes in at 2:30 every day and writes my script for 3 hours before I go on the air. And there was no script here, man. You know, you're just winging it. So it was different, but I loved it. I absolutely love it, man. To the point where I was driving home from Southfield about an hour last night, and I'm sitting there going, man, this might be something I want to do going forward. I loved it, man. But it is different.
You know, that's a question I get asked a lot of times. People are always asking me, where's Ryan? When are we going to see Ryan again? And I think you may have just answered that question, because we've only got a couple of months until the high school football season starts again. Are we going to see more of you doing play-by-play?
Well, I believe we are in line. Nothing signed yet, so I don't want to put the cart before the horse or anything like that. But I think we're in line to do Lawrence Tech coming up here in the fall again. And that's not a guarantee. Nothing signed. I don't want to, you know, jump the gun. But, you know, hopefully there. But, you know, regular TV, I don't know. You know, we'll see if things blow up as far as the play-by-play goes. And, you know, somebody ends up picking me up doing that. That would be awesome. But right now, you know, we're straight internet, man. We are taking this digital thing to the next level at State Champs, and I'm happy to be a part of it. Who knows where the business is going to go, but I think, and we're seeing it, I think streaming and I think online, whether it's YouTube or whatever it is where a lot of this business is going. And so for the time being, that's where you're going to find me. You're going to find me on social media, and you're going to find me on the YouTubes and whatnot, whether it be play-by-play, whether it be my documentaries, whether it be just covering a game, because we still do that, too, a couple times a week. You know, on a Tuesday night, on a Friday night, I will be at your high school covering your game, and then you can find not the normal NBC 25 or ABC 12, 30-second of highlight, or maybe 1 minute of highlights. You know, we're going to give you 2 minutes. If it's a real good game, we might give you 3 minutes of highlights, because it's the internet. We can do whatever we want, man.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Ryan, because, you know, you look at where newscasts are right now, really all across the board, all across the country. Sportscasters on local newscasts really only get maybe what? I don't know how you guys got it at ABC 12, but I know at NBC 25, Fox 66, we got maybe 3 minutes. And right. If you try to really cover something really good, that's pretty much half your sportscast. And then you got to figure out how much time do we give to Michigan or Michigan State? How much time do we give to the Lions, Tigers, Bears, or maybe the Bears may make the highlights too. You never know. And it's just like, how often do you get to really tell anything really good? And I watch your documentaries, man. And I tell you, you are one of the best in the state at doing that. And I'm not just blowing smoke right now. That really is the truth, because I've seen some of the ones that you've done lately, and you're not going to see that on a newscast. You're not even going to see that as a special, like an extended version of something. What you do right now, I think, is really your calling, because I've seen these documentaries that you've done. They're so good, and they're getting nominated for Emmys. And so what has it been
like? We've won a couple too, Duff. It's been a few years,
okay.
But yeah.
Okay, well, remind me, which ones did you win Emmys for?
Oh, crap. I got six of them. So I've won Best Sports Anchor. I've won three reporters. And my second documentary, Bucktown, Inside Bucktown, won its category. I can't remember exactly. It wasn't just Best Sports Documentary. It was called something else back then. That one of the individual stories from Bucktown won something, and then I won another one. I can't remember. But yeah, we got six of them, man.
Coming up, we talk to Ryan about his latest documentary. Once again, I want to say thank you so much for hitting the play button on this podcast. And that includes two very special listeners, Michelle and Bethany. They recently became patrons of A Duff Said. Now, for as little as $2 a month or $24 a year, you can help this show to continue to grow and provide the content that you enjoy. And if you become a patron of A Duff Said, we have got a lot of great gifts in store for you. We've got bumper stickers, we've got t-shirts. Heck, I'll even record your voicemail message. So if you're having trouble ever figuring out what to say, I'll say it for you. And that's A Duff Said. If you'd like to become a patron of A Duff Said, all you got to do is go to patron.podbean.com/A Duff Said. And now, my conversation with Ryan Slocum continues. I want to talk to you about your work for State Champs because you've done some really good documentaries. In fact, you just had one that released about a week or so ago. I wanted to touch base with you on that. This one is about a Saginaw High School basketball player by the name of Terrence Roberson. And when did you first meet him?
So, he's a 1995 graduate of Saginaw Buena Vista High School. I'm a 1998 graduate at Flushing. So he was the man, like when I was a freshman in high school. So I knew who he was. I've always known who he was. But I didn't meet him until, it was probably like 2 years ago when he started as an assistant coach at Saginaw High for Julian Taylor. And it really wasn't even anything. It was like just completely random. Hey, what's up, dude? Hey, what's up? Hey, how you doing? Hey, what's up, T? Okay. And then you keep walking, you know? So it really wasn't anything. And I became friends with him on Facebook. But I wasn't like really friends with the guy. And that was it, man. I really had no other connection to him. Now, Coach Ju at the high, I'm great friends with. You know, I talk to him all the time. And, you know, so that was kind of my connection. But it's really strange how it happened. So I'm doing these documentaries for State Champs, and we can get into the background on that in a second. But how this happened with Roberson was I had just signed on with what was at the time supposed to be 10 documentaries in 2021. Now, we're not going to end up doing that many. But anyway, so it's like the end. It was like Thanksgiving time or something like that. And I'm on Facebook. I'm like, man, what the heck am I going to do? I got to do 10 of these, and I got to get it rolling here really quick, like in the next 2 months. I got to have one out. And I just happened to jump on Facebook, which I never do. I stay off of there. And I see this conversation between Roberson and Tory Jackson, another Buena Vista grad. And if you didn't know, he was a four-year starter at point guard at Notre Dame. Graduated, I believe, Buena Vista in like 06. Anyway, four-year starter at Notre Dame. They're going back and forth, and they're talking about Roberson and this amazing story that he has to tell. And somebody's got to tell your story. Somebody's got to tell your story. Now, I just stumbled across this conversation between these two guys. And then I start reading the comments, and then I'm mentioned in the comments, and I didn't even know it. And it says, Ryan, can you help out here? Well, I was already about to hit him up and say, yo, I can do it. I can do it. He had already hit me up. So then I called him real quick. He told me a little bit about the background of Terrence. He's like, I'm going to give you Terrence's number. Terrence then called me immediately, and there we go. And it was on.
I'm glad that you mentioned the whole somebody's got to tell your story, because that's the opening line of the documentary. And you know a documentary is good if it grabs you right by the first line that you hear when it starts up. That's the first line. His cousin says, no one knows your story, and you were the guy that was kind of picked to tell this story. So what did you learn as you start talking to Terrence and members of his family and those who really knew him during the time that he played, which was the mid-90s?
Yeah, so for those that don't know who this guy is, Terrence Roberson, class of 1995, he was the seventh ranked, well, depending on the rankings, but his highest ranking was number 7 in the country. The year Kevin Garnett was number 1, 1995. He was part of, at that time, the most amazing class of Michigan high school basketball players that there was ever. You're looking at Albert White. You're looking at Tractor Trailer. You're looking at Morris Peterson, Antonio Smith. And that's just a couple of them, all in this class. And he was the jewel of the class. He was the dude. He won back-to-back state titles as a freshman and sophomore at DV. He was just the man. And then it was probably a case of too much too quick with him. Everything came easy to him. And then as things then, you know, and all he knew was winning. And when they got upset his junior year, when they were the number one team in the state, regardless of class, that kind of sent things spinning a little bit. And then into his senior year, they did not have a good year at all. And I knew about this. His last game, they played Flint Northern. Mateen Cleaves, Antonio Smith, went on to win the Class A state title that year. They're getting murdered. They're down like 30. And Roberson's trying to bring them back. So he's chucking threes and he's doing all that. Well, coach said, hey, quit shooting threes. And he and coach had already, their relationship started waning a little bit. It was a little rocky. And next trip down the floor, he shoots another three. Gets pulled out of the game, sits on the bench. Coach yells at him. They get in a little altercation. Unfortunately, Roberson took his jersey off on the bench and just walked out of the gym. And that was the last game of the regular season. And he got kicked off the team. Team then loses their first playoff game. And, you know, that's the end of that. So I knew that. But I didn't know the behind-the-scenes stuff as to why some of these things happened, why he was acting out a little bit. I didn't know that. And it turns out, and I don't want to give it away if you want to watch it, but without giving away the juicy details, his mother died when he was 11 right in front of his face. And, you know, I won't tell you how it happened or what happened, but she died right in front of him. And it really messed him up. To this day, as you could imagine, and you can see it, man. You can see it watching the story. It still affects him to this day. And however many years later that is, 35 years later. So that really messed with him. And now he got himself together. He went to Fresno State, played for Jerry Tarkanian, the guy who is always given second chances. Well, here's another one. Second leading scorer all time at Fresno. He did end up making the NBA, played for the Hornets, and now he's back in Saginaw and he's a coach. But before he was a coach, he started helping kids. He was working with troubled youth at some juvenile facilities and talking to them about his story and what he did and the troubles he had and just trying to be an ear for some of these kids that don't think they have an ear. And it's just awesome. And now he's coaching and he's doing the same thing as a coach because he's from the same streets these kids are from. So he is just being an ear, being a helper for these kids. And, hey, man, I know what you want to do. I know you want to do this. I know you want to get in trouble. But here's what's going to happen if you do. I wouldn't be here talking to you today, probably, if I didn't make bad decisions. And I should be, he says it in the story. He goes, you're talking to a guy that should be a multimillionaire. And at one point he said to me, he goes, you'd probably be doing a different story if I didn't make the decisions that I made. But, it's just awesome, man. It's a hero, a fall from grace, and now a rise back up kind of a story. Huge roller coaster, man. There's so much depth to this. It's just awesome. And he's doing a great job. And he's the best dude. I'm just so happy that he opened up, because he's been open about some of his troubles in the past. I've never heard him talk about his mother before. And to open up to me like he did, he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to do that. He didn't have to tell me about his drug use. In fact, he called me after I interviewed him the first time. He called me back like 3 days later. And he goes, hey, man, I think we need to do this again. I'm like, okay, well, what's up? He goes, I didn't give you the goods, dude. I kind of told you, but if we're going to do this, we need to do it. And I want to tell you exactly what happened. I want to tell you the truth. I want to be specific. I don't want to hold anything back. And I held back. That's how good of a dude this guy. And every time I talk to him, I just talked to him 2 days ago. And every time we're like, hopefully we will help somebody here. Hopefully we will help a kid here. If we help one kid, that's all that matters, man. One kid. He's just a great guy, man. And again, I'm just privileged that he opened up to me. He didn't have to do that. He didn't know me. He didn't know me at all. So it's an incredible story, and it's well worth your time. It's only 20 minutes long, so this isn't the O.J. Simpson or the Michael Jordan, which were awesome stories, 30 for 30 marathons. You know, it's 20 minutes, so you can check it out. State Champs Net on YouTube. Very easy. It's right there. Terrence Roberson. State Champs Net or State Champs Michigan. You can find it. It's on everything. It's on Facebook. It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram. And it's on YouTube. And StateChampsNetwork.com as well. If you go to StateChampsNetwork.com, you can find it there as well. So you can find it anywhere.
And I'm going to do you a solid, Ryan. It is also on the main page of my website, aduffsaid.com. Ryan, there are so many great moments in this documentary, but overall, I really do think it does serve as kind of a cautionary tale too, because kids nowadays in the Saginaw area, if they're looking up to basketball players, they're probably looking up to guys like Draymond Green or Jason Richardson, guys who are currently big names in the NBA, but before they really try to follow in their footsteps, they really do need to take a look at the path that Roberson took throughout his life, because this was a guy that was well on his way to becoming just as big a name as those guys are right now, but some things happened along the way that nearly completely derailed his hoop dreams. I want to share this clip right here, because not only is he describing a moment that resurrected his basketball career, but probably saved his life as well.
You talking to somebody that's supposed to be a multimillionaire, you know. And I never forget my daddy coming to me one day and he asked me, what if somebody came to you right now and said, if you quit smoking weed, if you get good grades, and you just do what you need to do, they'll give you $1 million right now. You know my answer? Well, I die. He say, so what you think they doing to you? What you think they doing? They ready to give you millions. Well, here you is want to follow behind such and such and such and such and do such and such. But you know, I'm a kid, that really didn't hit me, you know what I'm saying? Until I got all like, damn, that's what my daddy was talking about, like, damn.
And so from there, he ends up going to play college basketball at Fresno State. What was it about Roberson that convinced Jerry Tarkanian into giving him that second chance?
Well, obviously his talent. I mean, you know, and let me we didn't get into it. You're not going to see this in the documentary because at State Champs, we are a high school show. Everything we do, we cover high school sports. So what we wanted to do with every one of these documentaries that I'm going to end up doing, and in the future, you're looking at Jake Long. You're looking at Saginaw High against Arthur Hills rivalry. You're looking at Courtney Hawkins. We know Jake Long was the number one pick in the draft, and he went to Michigan and da-da-da and made millions of dollars. Well, we want to tell you a story about his high school career because a lot of people don't know that. Well, how did he get these millions? How did he become the number one pick in the draft? That's what we want to tell you. So here, yes, we mentioned, hey, Jerry Tarkanian, he went to Fresno State. He was great. But, you know, we didn't, like, go deep into that because this was all about his high school life. But what happened was, you know, Tark had just recently gone to Fresno, and he's just like a typical Tark guy. He takes chances on guys who maybe had some trouble, maybe in Terrence's, the biggest thing with Terrence wasn't even the incident at the end of his career. It was more he couldn't pass the ACT. He had trouble with the ACT and SAT, whatever, the college entrance exam. The one in Michigan we always took was the ACT. Like, he just couldn't get the qualifying score. And so he did have to sit a year at Fresno, but that's Tark, man. Tark takes all these guys that maybe have a little bit of something, and he coaches them up, and he dads them up, you know. He cares for these guys, and these guys will run through a wall for him. So he was the typical Tark dude. Like, he was supposed to go to Michigan. I mean, he was all over Michigan. Michigan State wanted him. Missouri wanted him. I mean, everybody wanted this kid. But once he couldn't pass that test, they slipped a little, and they slipped. We're going to back off. Well, Tark didn't. And when everybody else backed off, Tark said, hey, man, I'll take him. So there you go. He ends up at Fresno State.
Now, as I recall, that was also the issue that plagued Kevin Garnett when he was trying to go on to college. He couldn't pass it either, but then he makes the decision to go pro at that point, right, which hadn't been done at that time. There was no rules in place that said you couldn't do that. So he was kind of like the trendsetter for all those big names that came out of the 90s, like him and Kobe Bryant and a few others. But
yep,
there was a time when Roberson's name was listed right alongside those guys. How did he compare to them?
Well, Garnett was on his own level, obviously, you know. He was on his own level. But, dude, here's the thing with T. Rowe. This is another thing I didn't know until I started doing this research for this documentary. There are four people in the history. Now, kids might not think this is a big deal, but it used to be a big deal, okay? Parade Magazine was one of the many magazines. Magazines were these things that got sent to you once a week or once a month or whatever in the mail. So on top of that, Parade Magazine put out an All-American team every year. They were like the high school, like, they were one of the things, like the McDonald's All-American and Parade All-American. There are four people in the history of Parade Magazine that have been named All-American three times. Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning, Kenny Anderson, and Terrence Roberson. That's it. That's the list. And if you look his senior year, he was second team All-American. And the guys who were on the list with him, Lewis Bullock, who went to Michigan, Chauncey Billups, you may have heard of him, the new coach of the Portland Trailblazers. Paul Pierce, you may have heard of him. Terrence Roberson. I mean, he was elite. He did play there, next to the McDonald's All-American game, Magic Johnson started doing a game in the mid-90s that was played at the Palace of Auburn Hills, Metro Detroit, the Magic All-Star Classic or whatever it was called. He played in that. Paul Pierce was the MVP of that game. And there's video of that, and it's in the documentary. But, I mean, he's right there. He was right there with all of these guys. And he did make the NBA. He only played a couple of games, but he made it. And, I mean, he was just an extreme talent. He, in going back, he did get too much too soon. And it taught him that it was easy. He didn't have – he was so good from such a young age that he didn't have to work. So he never learned how hard work pays off or what hard work was. And if he would have had to do that, oh, my gosh. I mean, you're looking at a guy that everybody – he would have been a household name. Everybody would have known him. He would have been like Paul Pierce. He would have been like, you know, KG and Paul Pierce are – legendary figures, you know, but he would have been below that. He would have been a 10-year NBA guy. He would have been a guy people know. Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, he played for the whoever, right? Oh, yeah, he was good. Yeah, he was good. That's who he would have been. Explosive, just explosive, unbelievably explosive. Dunks on, he says in the doc, I used to dunk on everybody. He did. He used to just murder guys. it was incredible, man. He was incredible. And he still does. There's a 40 and over league, the Flint and Saginaw dudes that play every Saturday, and he still wrecks everybody in that. And by the way, when COVID, I don't know if they have fans at it yet, but you go to that 40 and over league, you're going to go see Andre Rison. You're going to see Mope Heat. You're going to see Tone Smith. You're going to see Terrence Roberson. They're a little older. They're a little slower. They don't jump quite as high, but, man, they can still ball.
The documentary is about Terrence Roberson, and you could see that on my website, aduffsaid.com. You can also check that out at State Champs as well as Ryan's YouTube page. So go to Ryan Slocum on YouTube. Check that out. And you can also check out some of Ryan's other documentaries. In fact, we were talking about Emmy nominations, and you were just recently nominated for one that we talked about, I believe it was last fall, when you did the one on the rivalry between Kaztek and Detroit King. That was so good, man. I watched not only your documentary, but some of the others that you were up against. And I don't think people quite realize just how much you put into your documentaries compared to others, because whereas other people get like staffs of like 10 people or more and they have all this footage available to them whenever they need it, you, on the other hand, you are one guy doing the work of probably about five or six other people, and yet you still turned out quality work. Tell us a little bit about that documentary that you did do on Cass and King.
I did have one dude help me. I gotta give John Kidd a shout out on that. He helped me find a bunch of the archive footage from State Champs, because he's our main producer, our senior producer, and he's been there for 15, 18 years. So he knew where a lot of the video was. And, oh, yeah, we got a touchdown from Donovan Peoples-Jones in 2012. Here you go. You got to have this. So I will, but yeah, you're right. And that's the we didn't win. We didn't win. We got beat by Bally Sports and Michigan State for a doc that they did. But just to be nominated and to see your name on there, where everything else was Bally Sports Detroit, Bally Sports, Bally Sports, and they've got 10 names listed. And then you see you, and it's State Champs, Yellow Flag Productions, Ryan Slocum. And you know that you did this by yourself in your basement on your Mac. It that meant the world, man, you know, to know that you did this where other people have a freaking team, you know. They got, oh, they're running, they're doing line changes on their dock, and here you are just sitting here by yourself. So that was awesome. And That's a great one too, man. If you want to check that one out, it's another 20-minute long. It's not going to kill you. Just talking about Cass Tech and Martin Luther King High School, the two of the biggest high schools currently left in Detroit. Either side of the city. What's different about your side of the city? What's different about our side of the city? And just the pros that have come through there, especially in the last 10, 15 years. They've won 7 state titles between them. And before that, Detroit area schools couldn't get out of like the second, third round of the playoffs. And now they're just powerhouses. So it's real cool. And you get a bunch of trash talk in there. You get to see a bunch of video you've never seen before. If you're a fan of, I mentioned Donovan Peoples-Jones, Jordan Lewis, all these dudes from the past, you're going to get to see them in high school. That's really cool. And then just talking about Detroit and what's special about Detroit. It really meant a lot, man. And I'll tell you, again, that is not my neck of the woods. I'm up here in the Flint area. So I knew about it, but I didn't know a ton. And now I feel like I'm part of the team, kind of. Like, I'm so invested in both schools now. It really brings you in. It makes you feel – it makes you root for these kids. And they played twice. So we did it last fall. They played twice. They played because of COVID. The first 3 games of the season got cut. So they ended up playing – it was supposed to be week 4. Well, that ended up being week 1. So they played in the season opener. And then they played at the end of the year for the city championship. So you get to see both of those games and what happened wrapped around dealing with COVID, wrapped around just the story in general, the trash talk, the history. It's fun, man.
You talk and about again, trash talk. You got trash talk going on between husbands and wives in this documentary. How deep this rivalry is.
My wife went to Cass. I went to King. I love it. Our son played for King. She made the best thing in her life. Best thing in life. Rivalry forever.
How much junk do you talk to her?
Oh, every day.
All day, every day.
All day, every day. When she said her prayers that night, she thanked God that she married a man for King.
Oh, whatever. Yeah. Dude, let me tell you. Yeah, he says, this is the greatest accidental soundbite I've ever had. Like, I was standing on the sideline. I knew I needed to get fans. And again, this is first game of the year. Only 2 fans are allowed in the stadium. So everyone else is lined up outside looking in. And Cass Tech is downtown Detroit. So there's skyscrapers all over the place and all this stuff. And then there's a giant fence all the way around. And people are lining the streets. Well, I turn to take a shot at the fans while I'm standing on the sideline. And for whatever, hey, come here. You know how it is, Duff. People always want to be on TV. Hey, come get us. I'm very thankful for this. Whatever reason, I said, yeah, I'll go get him. So I went over there. This guy ended up being the quarterback at Detroit King in 1992. He ends up being the greatest stinking interview in the history of the world. And he ends the interview. He and his wife are standing there. He's talking junk to her all the time. I even said, how much junk does he talk to you? And she goes, every day. And then he interrupts her and goes, yeah, every day she wakes up in the morning and thanks God that she married a man from King. And then he looks right in my camera and nods his head all cocky. It was the greatest. It was hilarious, man. And all their buddies were around. Oh, you got roasted. You know, it was awesome, man. And as soon as he said it, I was like, oh, this is gold. This is getting in. Like, this was the best decision I've made in a while coming over to talk to you guys. It what a great, and you know, they're obviously all joking and everything, but it was awesome. It's just hilarious, man.
That's why we do it, Ryan. That's why we do this business. It isn't about the money, because we don't get a lot. And yeah, right? Hours are terrible, and a lot of times the scheduling keeps us from enjoying holidays and other things that we might want to do. But when you get sound bites like that, it kind of makes it all worth it, because then you've got something that you can work with and you can turn it into something special. And that's really what you did there.
Yeah. I mean, and as soon as you said it, I mean, I'm just like, dude, I just got gold. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, you know, but it's making the show and it's going to be awesome. Whatever I do with it, it's going to be great. Not because of me, because of you. You're hilarious. You're a funny dude. So yeah,
I was thinking,
man,
that when I was watching it, I said, I can only imagine what Ryan's reaction was then, because I'm sure it was one of those moments where you just are doing your job, but then you get goosebumps because you know you found something really special.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that was kind of this entire doc. And going back to Roberson, it was the same thing with that. I knew it'd be good. I didn't know how good, you know, and a lot of times, you know, we can't do our job if people don't tell us stuff. So you got to make them comfortable enough, too. And that is a gift to make people comfortable that they can trust you and that they can tell you things. But you don't know. And sometimes people get nervous, or you're asking people about deep down stuff. You don't know what they're going to say. And it was like that with Roberson, too. Numerous things that he said. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, dude, how am I going to fit this into 20 minutes? Like, this could be a 2-hour 30 for 30. Like, oh, my gosh, everything the kid said was gold, man. It was just or heart-wrenching, or like it raised some emotion, whatever that emotion was. It raised it. And you should see the stuff that's on the cutting room floor, man. But yeah, it was the same way with Roberson too. Obviously the husband and wife were a different emotion than a lot of the Roberson stuff. But yeah, when he said, oh, I used to dunk on everybody, I write down like, oh, I'm using that. Like, that's great.
Just listening to you, I can hear the passion that you have for sportscasting and the job that you do. And this job, this career that you put together, it's taken you to a lot of places. You were the sports director at ABC 12 for WJRT in Flint for a number of years. But I want to know, when was it that you actually had that moment that this is what you wanted to do? Because Terrence Roberson said it quite clearly. When he saw the Fab Five, he said, that's going to be me someday. That's what I want to do. But what was the moment for you when you said that this is what you wanted to do?
Well, as far as sportscasting, period, my brother wanted to be a weatherman or a newscaster or whatever since I can remember, since the word go. And I would play my games, Little League games, basketball, fourth, fifth grade, whatever it was. He would sit in the stands with, there were things called tape recorders back in the day, kids, and like a little Walkman, and he would talk into it and he would broadcast the game. And he would do that anywhere we went on vacation. He's broadcasting our vacation. We're like driving down the road and he's like, here we are on I-75. And so that kind of made me think, and like every kid, you know, I wanted to play sports for a living, and I sucked, so that wasn't going to happen.
Same
and
here.
Then in ninth grade, my buddy Scott Vallon, who actually worked at Channel 25 as a sportscaster, we started at the same exact time, me at 12, him at 25. We were in ninth grade, we were in civics class, and I don't know what the heck, why we were talking about this, but he's like, yeah, I'm going to be a sportscaster. And during that time, Reese Davis from ESPN was the weekend sports anchor at Channel 12 here in Flint. And I loved Reese, you know, and I'm like, what? So when he said, I'm going to be a sportscaster, it like all just clicked. And I'm like, why didn't I ever think of that? That's a great idea. And I love sports. I watch sports constantly. I'm no good at sports. This will keep me in sports. What a great idea. So there you go. And that was it. And ever since that day, I knew this is what I wanted to do, and this is what I planned on doing. As far as what I'm doing now, so the first documentary I did was a running doc in 2009-10 on the Saginaw High basketball team. It's called Inside the High. And Saginaw High was coming off Draymond Green in 07 and 08. They won back-to-back state titles. They were like the program in the state at that time. And they were expected to at least contend for another title this season. And they were supposed to have an incoming freshman, the brother of Christian Dawkins, who you may know, unfortunately, with the pay-for-play scandal that was going on in the NCAA, he was the agent who was involved in all this. They just did a documentary on him on HBO. Christian Dawkins was on this team. His little brother, Dorian, was the number one ranked eighth grader in the nation. Point guard. They rank eighth graders. He was number one. Same year as Monte Morris, by the way. He was at the Izzo Shootout with his summer league team at Michigan State, playing their fourth game of the day, an unscheduled game. They played three already. Some team couldn't make it, so they said, yeah, we'll play this game. So they filled in. Kid's at the free throw line, and he starts, looking funny, and he starts tapping his chest, and he drops dead right at the free throw line. The number one player in the country. He was the son of Lou Dawkins, the head coach of Saginaw High. And I was fairly close with Lou at that time. A couple of months later, he calls me. I was in the parking lot at TJ Maxx. And I sat there and talked to him for 2 hours. And he says, if you want to do a story on this, let's do it. I'm like, well, what if we just followed you around all year? He goes, let's do it.
Wow, so I followed him around.
Yeah, I followed him around all year, and we did a weekly segment, so it was like a docu-series, they call it now. But back then, we called it running documentary. Every week, we did 2 to 5 minutes on what happened that week, what happened with the team. Some of it's online already. I don't have the whole series online, but there's a few parts already online. If you look up on YouTube, Dorian Dawkins, you'll see the 5-minute story I did on him right before the season. That was the intro to this series. And then there's another one where they hit a skid in the season that's on there. So that really, when I did that, and it was so much work, dude, but I loved it. It was because you got something out of it. You know, you're like, wow, I'm actually doing something here. I'm actually doing something. And it was kind of therapy to Lou and his family too, you know, and the kids. And I'm actually helping here. I'm actually doing something here.
And you know,
and it was good stuff. It wasn't just, hey, Castellanos hits it far out to left. It was, hey, here's Miggy, another home run. It wasn't just some BS like that. It was actually something. And I'm like, wow, I like this. This is cool. So then the same opportunity came up with Beecher a couple of years later when Monte Morris was a senior, now for the Denver Nuggets. They had gone undefeated, won the state title the year before. Here they were, and they had a bunch of stuff happen to them in the offseason. And same thing. Talked to Coach Mike Williams, and it's like, what do you think about me just following you around all year? But I need access now. I need to be in your house. I need to be in your locker room. I need to be in your everything. It's like, all right, let's do it. And then that one was even better than the Saginaw one. I'm like, man, I would love to do this all the time. And The opportunity came up with state champs. They were looking to expand. They were looking to go all digital. If you remember, they used to be on Fox Sports Detroit. They are not anymore. They're completely digital. And they were looking to expand. And they were looking to do more than just highlights. And I said, well, what if we do documentaries all the time? And they had done a couple. They did one on Jalen Rose. They did one on Tyrone Wheatley. They did one on the rivalry between Detroit Catholic Central and Brother Rice. But they wanted to do them more frequently. And I'm like, I'm your guy, man. Let's go. And, you know, here we go. And we're doing it. We got two out so far. I got one in the works currently. And hopefully we'll have three more on top of that by the end of the year.
My man, I cannot wait to see them, and you got to come on every time to keep us posted on what you've been up to with each one as they get released. Ryan Slocum, thank you so much for making the time this week on A Duff Said. I'm bringing the show back after a bit of a hiatus, so I could not have thought of a better person to have on than you to tell us about what you've been up to and all these great documentaries you've been putting together. I'm glad that you have found a calling because, like you said, you're not going to be able to really do those kind of things that you just listed if you were still working with just 5 minutes at the end of a newscast. And that's
right.
And that's not a slam on your former employer or your last job. It's just that...
Not at all.
Yeah. I just feel like this is what really draws in those non-traditional viewers that they're always telling us that they want us to get for sports. They want to make sure that it's something for everybody. And when I started this podcast, I've had a lot of people tell me that I don't know jack about sports, but when you put that human element to it like you do, it really draws me in, and then suddenly I'm interested in it. And for those people that are listening, I appreciate you guys telling me that, and I appreciate you guys becoming patrons of the show. If you like what I do, check out what Ryan's doing too, because it's something more than just your typical sports highlights. It's an actual story that is worth taking the time to listen to. Like Ryan said, it's 20 minutes of your life. It's not going to kill you.
No, dude, and I appreciate that, man. That means a ton because that's exactly what we're doing, man. And I got one quick story about the Beecher thing. I did like a little preview of it, you know, like a movie trailer the first week. And people were like, oh, this looks like it's going to be good. You know, okay, cool. Well, the first story I did was on Monte Morris. And how great he is and all this and signing with Iowa State and da-da-da. It was like a documentary of the last couple of years of his life. It was like 5 minutes long. And my producer was like, absolute 5 minutes? No, I can't give you 5 minutes. So, and it ran instead of sports. So our normal sports cast is 3 minutes. So I'm asking the producer for 2 extra minutes, which doesn't seem like a lot, but Duff, you know, that's like asking them for their life. You know?
Oh,
like,
for sure.
So I'm asking for like another 2:45 or something because it was like 3:30 or 5:30 or something. That's a ton of time in the news business. And she gave it to me. I'm like, I'm telling you, it's good. Trust me. I know what I'm doing. Give it. All right, I'll give it. It better be good, though. She comes back after she was the 5 o'clock producer when this ran. She comes back and she looks in the door and she goes, you have as much time as you want. Every week, you just tell me. I'm like, as much time? She's like, whatever you want, just give me a heads up so I know. Whatever you want, you got it. And I was like, wow, that's huge. You know, that's high praise. And then another episode aired later in the year, and it was just the seniors from the Beecher team sitting around, like a round table discussion about life and living in the hood and the way people look at them, what they try to do, stereotypes they try to break, how tough it is, you know, being them. And I get it live. I come back. My phone's ringing. I answer the phone, and it was just some lady. And she goes, hey, I really don't know why I'm calling. I just felt I needed to call. What I just saw was incredible. I don't know those kids. I don't know anything about those kids. I don't have anything in common with those kids. But I'm rooting for them. I don't know why I'm telling you this. It was so weird. She just kept saying, like, I don't know why I felt I needed to call, but
I hope they do it. I hope they win. I'm so proud of those kids. They seem like great kids. I just thought I needed to tell you. I'm like, awesome. Like, that was probably the best compliment I've ever gotten in my life.
And major props to that producer who decided to give you that extra time, because that's taking away time that you could see pictures of puppies, you know, or get a few extra minutes of the weather on a sunny day. They actually were willing to relent that time to you. That's amazing.
Yeah, here's Jimbo the dog in your 17th weather forecast of this hour. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you're right. But, no, they do have important stuff. But, dude, yeah, it was like pulling teeth. And for her to say, you can have whatever you want. Just give me a heads up. I mean, it was awesome, man. And it was all for the kids. And I got friends now and acquaintances that I'm going to have forever because of this. And it's not because I was trying to go win an award or anything. I was trying to tell their story, which is like with that lady. That's why I told you the story about the lady that called. It wasn't about any of that. It was the fact that I was trying to tell their story. I was trying to add that human element that you talked about. You know, a lot of these kids have forgotten, man, or they just think they're just kids that put a ball through a hoop. And that's not the case. That's not the case, man. And that's what we were trying to tell everybody. And it worked. And it worked. And I'm so glad it worked. And I'm so glad people recognize that. And everybody, you know, in those towns are appreciative. I still talk to Lou Dawkins to this day. I still talk to Monte Morris. Happy birthday. It's your birthday today, Monte. To this day. Everybody, you know, and it's because they knew. You know, they know you don't want it. You're trying to help. You're trying to help. You don't want anything from them. You just want to tell their story. And that's when good journalism happens, man. And that's what we're doing here, man. That's what we did with Roberson. That's what we did with Cass and King. That's what we're going to do with The Hill and the High coming up this summer. It's going to be awesome, dude. And I can't thank you enough for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Hey, you got a mic here anytime you want it, my friend. Thank you so much for making the time this week on A Duff Said.
You're the man, Duff.
And with those kind words, we wrap up this edition of A Duff Said. And now here's a look at what's on tap for next week.
When you don't play any baseball and you've got a front office staff of 40, and then, you know, when the news broke that we weren't going to play baseball, half the people in our front office lost their jobs. And that was probably what hit the hardest is, you know, there's people that you show up to work with every day that you consider family or friends or whoever it may be, and they've now lost their jobs. And then you have another 5 to 10 people who have been furloughed, and who knows what the future status of their workplace, you know, or their job at the ballpark will be.
The Los Angeles Dodgers won the World Series last year despite playing in a shortened season because of the pandemic. But for minor league baseball teams across the country, there was no season. And as you just heard, that led to some very tough decisions that had to be made by one of the Dodgers' minor league organizations in Midland, Michigan. Next week, Brad Tunney of the Great Lakes Loons joins me to tell me how they got through it and what changes have been made as we move forward in the new normal. Until then, this is Duff Tyler reminding you that if Duff said it, it must be true, because that's what A Duff Said.